This is the Biblical Unitarian Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Biblical Unitarian Podcast, the podcast that aims to start conversations about the oneness and unity of God and about the humanity of Jesus. My name is Dustin Smith, and as always, I will be your host. Thank you so much for tuning to this week's episode. We have episode number 322 for you this week, which is entitled, What is the Two Powers in Heaven Heresy? I've had a lot of listeners request that I spend some time talking about the Two Powers in Heaven Heresy, and today we're going to begin our exploration of this very fascinating and interesting topic, as it certainly pertains to Judaism and early Christianity and views of monotheism and the development of monotheism and all sorts of interesting facets of those topics. So, in 1977, a scholar named Alan Siegel published his volume entitled Two Powers in Heaven, Early Rabbinic Reports About Christianity and Gnosticism. And Dr. Siegel argues in this book, basically, that Jewish rabbis spoke about this thing called the Two Powers in Heaven. And these rabbis understood this as a heresy that really needed to be refuted. Now, Siegel in this book also argued that this particular heresy was not just simply known during the rabbinical period. Siegel argued that it could be traced back as far as the first century AD. He saw evidence of it in Jewish circles, particularly in the writings of Philo of Alexandria, and he also saw it in Christian circles. Alan Siegel saw evidence of the two powers in heaven in the writings of Paul, in the Gospel of Mark, no surprise, in the Gospel of John, and in the book of Revelation. So that's Paul, Mark, John, and Revelation. And so these Christian authors, in addition to the writings of Philo of Alexandria, have convinced Alan Siegel that this heresy of the two powers in heaven was alive and well as early as the first century. And this has led some scholars to assume that early Christians were primed to hold to a Binitarian understanding of God, specifically where the Son can effectively be treated as God alongside the Father. And these scholars would say that this is the way that we should be reading the exalted claims about Jesus within the New Testament. Other scholars, however, have objected to this reconstruction, saying that it doesn't necessarily fit the facts as we have them. So, what is the rabbinic evidence for the two powers in heaven heresy? What passages were viewed as controversially suggesting that there was more than one power in the heavens, thus bringing Jewish monotheism into serious question? And how did the rabbis respond to this heresy with their own scriptural arguments? Let's find out on this week's episode of the Biblical Unitarian Podcast. So what we'll do this week is we're going to look at three of the rabbinical texts that Alan Siegel raises within his book. I just picked three, but he actually raises quite a few of them. But if we spent the time going through all of them, we would be here for several hours. But I wanted to give three texts that I really think demonstrate the weight and the complexity of this two powers in heaven heresy. So in no particular order, we're just going to start with this one, which is the Mechilta of Rabbi Ishmael. And the passage is Bahodesh number 5. So I'll explain what all those terms mean and who Rabbi Ishmael is, but I want to read the text first, and then we can go and discuss it. Okay, So it starts with a quotation from the Hebrew Bible. I am Yahweh your God. Why is this said? Because when he was revealed at the sea, he appeared to them as a mighty hero making war. As it is said, quote, Yahweh is a man of war, end quote, from Exodus 15, verse 3. He also appeared at Sinai like an old man, full of mercy, as it is said, quote, and they saw the God of Israel, end quote, Exodus 24, verse 10. And of the time after that they had been redeemed, what does it say? Quote, and the like of the very heaven for clearness, the second part of Exodus 24, verse 10. Again, it says, quote, I was watching until thrones were set up. That's in Daniel chapter 7, verse 9. And it also says, quote, a fiery stream issued and came forth from him, end quote. Scripture would not give an opportunity to the Gentiles of the world to say, there are two powers, but declares, quote, I am Yahweh your God, from Exodus 20, verse 2. I was in Egypt, I was at the sea, I was in the past, I will be in the future to come. I am in this world, I am in the world to come. As it is said, quote, behold now that I, even I, am he, end quote. That's from Deuteronomy 32, verse 39. Here's another quote. Even unto old age, I am the same. That's from Isaiah 46, verse 4. Another quote. Thus says Yahweh, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first and the last. And that's a quote from Isaiah 44, verse 6. And it says, quote, who has performed and accomplished it, calling forth generations from the beginning? I, Yahweh, am the first, and with the last, I am he. That's a quote from Isaiah 41, verse 4. And that's the entire passage. So that is the Mechilta of Ishmael, who was a rabbi. And again, that passage is Bahodesh number 5. What is a Mechilta? Mechilta is basically an Aramaic word for a collection of rules for the process of interpretation. This particular rabbinic text can be dated to the 3rd century AD. So we're talking about 200 years after the writing of the New Testament documents. And one of the things that this passage does, if you're able to follow along, is that it identifies the opponents as, quote, Gentiles of the world. And what do these Gentiles of the world do? They are the ones that say that there are two powers. So they say that there are two powers. Now, who are these Gentiles of the world? Well, short answer is, we don't really know who they are. Maybe they're a group that's loosely defined as what we would call Gnostics, but we can discern from this passage that these heretics, at least from the perspective of Rabbi Ishmael, were pointing to three texts from the Hebrew Bible that supported their claim that there were specifically two powers in heaven. What were those passages? Well, we saw one of them was Daniel chapter 7, verse 9. And this is a famous passage in rabbinical speculation about the number of powers in heaven, because Daniel chapter 7, verse 9 says that thrones were set up. Plural. Perhaps you might be reading Daniel 7, you might think that, well, there's one throne for the Ancient of Days and one throne for the Son of Man. But it bothered a lot of Jews that this passage indicates that there were multiple thrones that were set up, and yet there's only one God. The next passage that gets described in this passage is Exodus chapter 15, verse 3, where it says that God is a man of war. Many of the modern English translations will simply translate this as God is a warrior, but it does in the Hebrew say that God is a man of war. And presumably this is a young man, because there are other references to a man of war within the Hebrew Bible, and it indicates young men who are of fighting military age. However, the passage also indicates, the third text from Exodus 24, verse 10, that God is portrayed as an old man. And so how do these Jews make sense of the fact that God seems to have portrayed himself in the book of Exodus as a young man of war, but also as an old man? There seems to be two different designations, two different descriptions. Well, when you combine that with the fact that there are multiple thrones that are set up in Daniel chapter 7, verse 9, we can see that these heretics, these Gentiles of the world, have concluded, based on these passages, that there are two powers in heaven, the young man God and the old man God, and they sit on these thrones. Presumably there are two thrones. So, in order to refute this heresy, the heresy of two powers in heaven, Rabbi Ishmael cites several passages, and these passages emphasize God's oneness and his unity. Namely, these passages are focusing on the fact that God is only one person, because that is what you do if someone suggests that there are multiple powers in heaven. You point to the passages that indicate that there's only one person, that one person is God alone. Yahweh is a single person, not two or three persons. So, in his refutation of this heretical suggestion that there are two powers in heaven, Rabbi Ishmael notes that Daniel 7 also indicates that the fiery stream comes forth from him, using the Aramaic third-person pronoun. He also cites the beginning of the Decalogue of the Ten Commandments, where God says, "I am Yahweh your God." So, of course, you have the first-person singular reference, I am Yahweh your God. He also quotes Deuteronomy 32:39, where it says, "I, even I am He." That's one of the famous I am He passages from the Hebrew Bible. Rabbi Ishmael also quotes Isaiah 46, verse 4, where Yahweh says that even unto old age, I am the same. And I wondered about this, and I think the reason why he cited this passage is because it suggests that there's really no contradiction between the image of Yahweh as a young man of war and as an old figure, because the passage is saying that Yahweh is the same even unto an old age. As the years go by, and presumably this eternal being Yahweh is, from at least some perspective, getting older, he is indicating that he is the same, that there's no contradiction between a portrayal of God, and these are all anthropomorphisms, so God being a young man of war and, of course, God being an old figure would not be a contradiction. And, of course, there are references to God being the first and the last, and, of course, the reference again indicating that God says that I am He, from Isaiah. That's Ani Hu in Hebrew. I, the first person singular pronoun, and He, the third person singular pronoun. So that's very interesting that the rabbinical Jewish response, at least in this passage, to the heretical claim from the Gentiles of the nations that there are two powers in heaven is to emphasize the fact that God is only one person. That's how they responded to that particular heresy. Let's look at the next passage. The next passage comes from the Babylonian Talmud, and this is Babylonian Talmud Tractate Hag 15a. And I'll read the passage, and then I'll come back and I'll talk a little bit about this and the dating. But this passage is going to talk about a pretty famous Jewish heretic. And so the passage says that the Gemara stated earlier that Ahare, that's the name of the heretic, Ahare chopped down the saplings, becoming a heretic. With regard to him, the verse states, "Do not let your mouth bring your flesh into guilt," a quote from Ecclesiastes 5, verse 5. Now, the Gemara poses a question, quote, "What was it that led him to heresy?" He saw the angel Metatron, who was granted permission to sit and write the merits of Israel. He said, "There is a tradition that in the world above there is no sitting, no competition, no turning one's back before him. Namely, they all face the divine presence. There is no lethargy. Seeing that someone other than God was seated above," he said, "perhaps," the Gemara here interjects, "heaven forbid, there are two powers. And there is another source of power in control of the world in addition to God." Such thoughts led Ahare to heresy. And that is the Babylonian tractate Hag 15a. So we've got this figure here named Ahare. And by the way, Ahare is just a word meaning other, because the Jews thought that this particular figure, whose real name was Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya, so they called him Other because they said that he went in the other direction. He turned backwards. He turned from the path of truth to the path of heresy. So they just described him as Other. But really his name is Rabbi Elisha. So I think for the sake of the conversation, I'll just call him Rabbi Elisha than the word for other. So Rabbi Elisha, interestingly enough, lived in the first century AD. Now, Alan Siegel notes, and actually several other scholars have come after and confirmed, that this particular passage in the Babylonian Talmud was a very late addition. And the Babylonian Talmud by itself was written around the year 500, so the beginning of the 6th century. And this passage is a late addition to it, so it's probably even later than that. So how is it that you have this tradition of this terrible heretic, a guy that actually lived in the first century, and yet people are still saying terrible and awful things about him in the 6th century and even beyond that? Well, the tradition was that Rabbi Elisha was one of these four famous rabbis who had a mystical experience and entered into paradise. They witnessed a heavenly vision. And the issue here is that Rabbi Elisha claimed to have witnessed a particular angel, and that angel's name is Metatron. In other Jewish sources, like 3rd Enoch, Metatron is a principal angel of Yahweh who regularly acts as God's premier agent. And what we see going on in this passage is that Rabbi Elisha claims to have seen Metatron sitting, and that's very important. This suggests, or at least to the other rabbis, they regarded Metatron as being portrayed by Rabbi Elisha as enthroned. He's not just simply sitting down. He's actually enthroned, just as God is enthroned. And guess what? This makes two enthroned figures. Now, there's something about Metatron that you really need to understand to kind of help put a lot of these pieces together. In some Jewish traditions, Metatron is none other than Enoch, who, by some readings of Genesis chapter 5, verse 24, was taken up to heaven. Now, in the Enochic tradition, the figure of Enoch is actually the Son of Man. And if the Son of Man is pictured alongside the Ancient of Days from Daniel chapter 7, where, as we've seen, multiple thrones are set up, then we can see how some Jewish interpreters would connect the dots, and they would perceive Metatron as seated on the other throne from Daniel chapter 7. And so it appears that the rabbis attribute to Rabbi Elisha the belief that there are two deities that are enthroned. Now, it's hard to know for sure what Rabbi Elisha actually thought, because this is something that's being attributed to him over 500 years after he was actually living. We don't know exactly what he says. He didn't leave any writings behind himself. But he had a visionary experience, and the things that he said, clearly he was remembered as having seen or perhaps invented something that was very heretical. The suggestion that there is another figure that is enthroned alongside the true God suggested, at least to these rabbis, that there were two powers in heaven. And that was a big no-no, especially when your religion is centered around the Shema, where the Lord our God is one. That's our second passage. The third passage we'll look at is from a document called Sifrei Deuteronomy, and the passage is passage number 379. Okay, so this passage says, starting with a quote from Deuteronomy 32:39, "See now that I, even I, am He," end quote. This is the response to those who say there is no power in heaven. He who says that there are two powers in heaven is answered. Has it not elsewhere been said, quote, "And there is no God with me," end quote. And similarly, for one who says there is no power in heaven to kill or to revive, none to do evil or to make good, Scripture teaches, quote, "See now that I, even I, am He. I kill and I revive." That, again, is Deuteronomy 32:39. And again, quote, "Thus says Yahweh, the King of Israel, and His deliverer, Yahweh of hosts, I am the first, I am the last, and besides me there is no God," end quote. That's from Isaiah 44, verse 6. Another interpretation, quote, "I kill and I revive," again from Deuteronomy 32:39. This is one of four sure allusions to resurrection of the dead. And the passage goes on, it lists those. "I kill and I revive," from Deuteronomy 32. "Let my soul die the death of the righteous. Let Reuben live and not die," from Deuteronomy 33. "After 2 days, he will revive us," from Hosea chapter 6. I might think that death was by one power, while life was by another. Scripture teaches, quote, "I wound and I will heal," end quote. Just as wounding and healing is by one power, so is death and life by one power alone. That's Sifrei Deuteronomy, verse 379. Okay, so what is Sifrei Deuteronomy? Sifrei Deuteronomy is part of the Taniatic Midrashim, and this particular Midrash is dated to either the very late 2nd century or more likely to the early 3rd century. So out of our three texts, this is going to be the earliest of these three. Now, this text is responding to unnamed opponents, or perhaps one opponent, but it's likely multiple opponents, and they are arguing for two powers in heaven. But the nature of these two powers is very interesting in this passage. Did you catch it? Did you notice it? These two powers seem to be antagonistic towards each other. The two power heretics that this passage is responding to, These two power heretics suggest that one power is responsible for healing, and the other power is responsible for wounding. And so it suggests that the two powers in the eyes of these heretics are actually working against each other, which is not the sort of thing that you would expect God and a principal agent to do. The fact that you have an agent means that he is representing the sender. It means that they're working together. They're working in tandem. They're working hand in hand. But these two powers appear to be enemies. They appear to be antagonistic towards one another. So this has led some modern scholars to interpret these heretics that are arguing for these two powers as being adherents to some form of what we might call Gnosticism. Because in Gnosticism, or at least in some forms of it, there are competing deities and demiurges that are working against each other. There could be a good god and there could be an evil god. But this is not the sort of thing that you would expect in a Christian source. In a Christian source, even if you have the one true God, the Father, and some sort of logos figure or some sort of son or some sort of angel, at least they're on the same side. At least they're working together. And this is pretty important for our study because see Fray Deuteronomy verse 379 is the earliest rabbinical reference that we can actually date from the rabbinical period to the two powers heresy. And it seems to have nothing to do with what could be described as an authentic Jewish view or a Christian view. It talks about two powers, but the two powers are working against one another. One of the two powers is trying to give life, to heal, to make alive, to raise the dead, and the other one is trying to kill, to wound, and to work against the making of life. So, when the author of Sefer Deuteronomy defends the true God against the two-power heretics, he, like the first passage we looked at, stresses God's unity and God's oneness. He repeatedly quotes Deuteronomy 32:39. I think I quoted three or four times that he cited this passage, where it says, "I, even I, am he." All of these singular references, singular first-person pronoun, singular third-person pronoun, you can only say that if the person speaking is one single person. A singular pronoun refers to one person, not two, three, or any other number of persons. He also indicates that there is no God with me. And of course, me, of course, is another first-person singular pronoun, but there's no other God that's with me. The speaker says that I am the first and the last. Besides me, there is no God. Again, using I, that first-person pronoun. There's no God besides me, another first-person pronoun. And God claims to be the only one who both kills and makes alive. The passage says that I wound and I will heal. This seems to be a response to the two-power heretics that are saying that there's one power that is wounding and one power that is healing, but the author of Sefer Deuteronomy is citing a passage indicating that Yahweh is the one who both wounds and heals. It's only one person who is doing these two things, and it can't be read as referring to two different persons. So in sum, the two powers heresy was discussed in several rabbinic texts, and we actually didn't get to cover all of them. The idea that there were two divine figures in heaven was seen by these Jewish rabbis as a gross distortion of the Jewish faith, at least for these conservative Jews. Those who promoted the two powers heresy ranged from Gnostics to some unnamed Gentiles of the nations. Now, the tradition that pins the heresy to the first century rabbi Elisha is just really too late to be taken at face value when it comes to any form of dating. By the end of the 2nd century AD, but more likely the beginning of the 3rd century, we have evidence for the existence of heretics that are arguing for the two powers in heaven. And it seems that these are not Jews. They're not Christians. They seem to be Gnostics who view the two powers as being antagonistic towards one another. Now, when these rabbinical Jews sought to defend God from the two powers heresy, they didn't respond by saying, well, Yahweh is triune, Yahweh is Father, Son, and Spirit, and that's going to be our response to saying that there are two powers in heaven. They didn't say that there were three powers in heaven as a response to the two power heretics. They didn't say that, well, these two power heretics are just not giving enough weight to the third divine person of the Trinity. Instead, these rabbinical Jews cited passages that speak about God's oneness. They spoke about God being a single person, about God talking and referring to himself with singular pronouns. The Jews acted this way because that is the clear teaching of the Hebrew Bible. God is only one person, not two, and certainly not three persons. Yahweh is only one person, and there is no God beside him. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Join us next week as we examine the evidence that Alan Siegel puts forth to suggest that the two powers heresy was actually present in the 1st century AD. Specifically, we'll be looking at the writings of the non-Christian Jew Philo of Alexandria. Please look forward to our next episode. If you enjoy our podcast, please consider supporting us as we aim to promote the sound truths about the oneness and unity of God and about the humanity of Jesus. You can support us absolutely for free by subscribing on YouTube and iTunes, by giving us an honest review on iTunes, and by sharing your favorite episodes with your friends. If you'd like to offer a financial donation, you can check out our episode description for a PayPal link, or you can subscribe with a paid membership on our YouTube channel. The Biblical Unitarian Podcast is produced and edited by Dustin Williams. I am Dustin Smith, your host. Until next time, please take care.